You're listening to highlights from One Planet Podcast's interview with Guillaume Lafortune, Vice President and Head of the Paris Office at the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
I've always wanted to be also in the room with those that change the world. And I guess there's different ways to do this, but my way is to try to contribute in a modest way with the analytical work that I do. And I think at this DSN, this is one of the great opportunities. Finally, another motivator in my journey has been to try to think about what can be good and what can I do for having a positive impact on the next generation. I have two kids, so what can I do to make this world a better place for my kids, but also for the future generations? The SDSN has been set up to mobilize research and science for the sustainable development goals. And each year we try to come up with a fair and sound diagnosis of how countries are doing in terms of their progress on the 17 sustainable development goals, which were adopted back in 2015 by all UN member states, the first time in human history that we have common goal for the entire world. And so this is what we try to do, especially with this SDG index each year, is to have sound methodologies, but also to translate this into actionable insights for generating, at the end of the day, impact. Out of all of the targets that we track, only 16% are estimated to be on track. And again, this is an agenda that combines not only environmental development, but also social development, economic development, and good governance. 16% of the targets are on track. Currently, none of the SDGs are on track to be achieved at the global level. The BRICS countries, for instance, are making quite significant progress. So when we started tracking this in 2015, they were below the world average. Right now, they are above the world average SDG index. East and South Asia are also making quite significant progress. And if we go down one level to the level of countries that are making the most progress on this agenda, we see countries like Benin, Bhutan, Cambodia, Indonesia, but also countries like Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Togo, UAE, Uzbekistan, that are making quite significant progress. And among the countries I just listed, some of them have very strong long-term planning departments. For instance, I'm thinking about Indonesia. But also some of them have developed very innovative tools like sustainable development goals bonds, so sovereign financing instruments structured around the SDGs. That's the case for a country like Benin or Uzbekistan. And I think those are examples we can build on in order to achieve the goals. We need to build on what has been, achieved and the progress that we've made, including by developing sovereign investment bonds around the SDGs in the next phase of this agenda. There's 6 years left. I think it's very clear that we won't achieve all of those goals by 2030. One of the recommendations that we are making in this year's Sustainable Development Report is perhaps we will need eventually to extend this agenda to 2050. This would align with the Paris Climate Agreement. And we will need to build a narrative so that it's not just postponing the homework that needs to be handed in, but perhaps raising a little bit ambition and bringing new topics into the mix. For instance, artificial intelligence back in 2015 was not mentioned in the official 2030 agenda document. So that's for sure a topic that might need to be incorporated in the next agenda that will continue the SDGs beyond 2030. There's been various estimates that have been put forward in terms of the financing gap to achieve the SDGs, and often they tend to focus on the infrastructure investment gap to a large extent. And so I think, there's been different estimates out there, but essentially the financing gap, especially for developing economies, would be somewhere between $1 and $4 trillion per year that would need to be mobilized compared to what is currently being mobilized right now. $1 to $4 trillion might seem like a very large number, right? But when we take a step back and look at this from the global economy, $1 or $4 trillion is basically equivalent to between 1% and 4% of global GDP. I think the story needs to be told that there is actually no financial impossibility in achieving those goals and investing into the infrastructures that are needed into the SDGs. But it's basically a question of political leadership, in particular to align the global financing flows to achieve sustainable infrastructure and sustainable development and help the countries that need it the most. When we published this year the Sustainable Development Report, the title this year is the SDGs and the UN Summit of the Future, because what we're trying to do is to support this very important summit that is coming up in September, which has been called for by the UN Secretary General, to basically come up with a new vision for the UN system. We believe that to achieve goals that are complex, we need three things: global cooperation and peace, financing, and long-term pathways. And those long-term pathways must be supported by strong monitoring systems who track progress. In 2012, the UN Security General at the time, Ban Ki-moon, decided to basically set up and mandate a new organization to mobilize research and science for the SDGs. And at the time, the SDGs were not yet adopted, so part of our role was to make recommendations on what could follow at the time the Millennium Development Goals, the MDGs, which were adopted from 2000 to 2015. And in 2012, there was the whole discussion around, okay, well, what will come next? So our early reports at SDSN have been around what could be the next set of goals. And then the goals were, of course, adopted. And I think a key term in our organization is Sustainable Development Solutions Network. So our goal is to come up with solutions for this agenda. And in this sense, we do four major things. First of all, we try to advise the UN leadership, the leadership of other international institutions, multilateral development banks, national governments, local governments, on SDG policies, analytics, and planning and monitoring. Second of all, we mobilize the largest global network of researchers and scientists that aim to implement the SDGs, sometimes at a very micro level within their university curricula, within their campus, but also at the city level. Third, we develop our own tools. The SDG Index is one. We do a lot of work also on long-term pathways, scenarios, including for food and land pathways. And then fourth is education for sustainable development. At the end of the day, I mean, what we care about is evidence-based policies, science-based policies, the science-policy interface. But indeed, if we don't have public opinions that support those kinds of policies, this is an issue. So this is why this fourth pillar of our work on education for sustainable development, the SDG Academy, tries to bring to the world, at very low cost, often free of charge, education to the entire world online for educating the future generations, but also current practitioners around sustainable development. AI, in my mind, can be very positive for this agenda, but there's, of course, a real question around regulation. And going back to our bread and butter at the SDSN, I think this is really something we should think about, how to incorporate AI. Either we incorporate AI targets and regulations within some of the existing goals, or we could also think about a separate goal. I think the situation in France perhaps reflects a broader situation in many European countries where we see growing polarization, fragmentation of our societies. Many countries are facing a move towards more conservative government in Europe. When we have all those political deadlock, this fragmentation, political violence, and so on, there's a risk that we're not able institutionally to advance those long-term goals and objectives. When we look at the latest document of the European Council, the strategy for 2024 to 2029, which was just published a few weeks ago, there's zero mention of sustainable development goals, zero mention of Agenda 2030. Issues like climate and biodiversity are barely mentioned. When we look at the G20 declaration of India last September, the SDGs are mentioned many, many times. And as I said, we have countries that are actually adopting sovereign investment instruments around the SDGs, like Benin, like Uzbekistan, for instance, are really using this agenda and taking it seriously. And so I think it's in the interest of Europe to continue to use the SDGs, talk about the SDGs, and use this as a common language with the rest of the world, including the Global South. The other thing that we've been trying to track this year, especially in the context of the Summit of the Future, is if we think that global multilateralism based on the UN system is important, we looked at this by focusing on six indicators. One is which countries ratify most of the major UN treaties, which countries tend to vote alongside the rest of the majority vote at the UN General Assembly. We also looked at the participation, the membership in UN organizations. We've looked at which countries promote peace and demilitarization. We've looked at the adoption of unilateral coercive measures, which are forbidden in the UN system. And we've also looked at which countries tend to pay their dues on time, so finance the UN system, and also achieve their targets on official development assistance and international solidarity. And so we compiled those different metrics and made this available in our report, but also online. The median score on this index, which goes from zero, very low support for UN-based multilateralism, to 100, high support for UN-based multilateralism, the median score is 70. So the way I interpret this is that despite the fact that we talk a lot about the crises of multilateralism and fragmented multilateralism, there's actually a majority of countries that want this UN system to work. What I think gives me hope is the fact that when this agenda, the Sustainable Development Goals, were adopted back in 2015, there was this agreement that 40 countries each year would go in front of the international community and present so-called voluntary national review. And now in 2024, basically 180 out of 193 countries have done this. In fact, it could be that by now it's actually 190, because Yemen and South Sudan were on the list to present at the High Level Political Forum, which is taking place right now in New York. So there's only three countries that haven't done their homework and haven't engaged with what had been agreed in 2015 around the voluntary national review process. And two of them are in deep political and social crises. Those are Haiti and Myanmar. And the last one is the United States of America. The problem is you cannot achieve sustainable development in the middle of raging wars. First of all, because there's direct negative humanitarian impacts, catastrophic impacts on many of those goals. Of course, decent lives, poverty, mortality rates, and so on. So there's a direct impact on those goals. Second of all, there's also some major spillover effects. And thirdly, it's a major distraction for advancing towards sustainable development. I mentioned this document, the strategic priority from the European Council 2024-2029. This is very much oriented towards security issues, military issues, strategic independence issues, far less about long-term goals and objectives. Peace is an absolute prerequisite to advance towards those goals. Former Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin also spoke very eloquently back in 2003 at the United Nations and made that famous speech and refused that France would join the United States as part of the Iraq war. Minister of Foreign Affairs Roland Dumas passed away last week. And it's actually interesting to see that him and Mitterrand in 1986, in a context where the US were pushing France to bomb Gaddafi and Libya, actually stood up and refused that US airplanes would fly on top of French soil and were in favor of a diplomatic and negotiated solutions with Muammar Gaddafi at the time in Libya. My hope today is that some leaders would emerge with innovative diplomatic solutions for negotiated peace as soon as possible so that we stop the human suffering in Ukraine, in Gaza, in Yemen, in Sudan. And once we stop this, then the rest, we have tools, we have visions, we have programs, we have networks that can really help move towards sustainable development, because those goals are not unachievable, but we need peace. We released a report last March with the OECD and the European Committee of the Regions, and we surveyed more than 240 local and regional leaders. And I was struck by two things in the study. First of all is a very high percentage of those local and regional leaders are telling us we do use the SDGs when we think about our local and regional policies. You know, so the momentum is there. The second thing is when we ask them, what is the main barrier for you to achieve those goals? The number one factor is financing. On the 25th of July, so the day before the opening of the Olympic ceremony, we will actually release at SDSN the results of about 18 months of work by the SDSN Commission on Urban SDG Financing. This commission was co-chaired by Mayor Hidalgo here in Paris, Mayor Eduardo Paes from Rio de Janeiro, and our president, Professor Jeffrey Sachs, which will make clear recommendations around how to solve this issue around access to financing for local and regional authorities. There is this UN Summit of the Future in September. We have a COP Climate, which will take place in Baku, Azerbaijan this year, but also a COP 30, which will take place in 2025 in Brazil. And then this very important conference will take place in Spain in 2025 in June, which is the fourth international conference on financing for development. I remain hopeful because we have plenty of occasions in the next 18 months to talk about these issues, negotiate, and find major breakthroughs on the policy and financing side. One of the main characteristics of Canada is the amount of forests, lakes, mountains, and the access to nature that you have. So I've been exposed to this, and from a very young age, I've always had the willingness to preserve the beauty from nature. And I think when you have kids, you hope that they will benefit from an environment which is socially, economically, but also environmentally safe, and that they will be able to live in peace. I think there's no reason why we cannot make major breakthroughs in this decade and beyond on all of those 17 sustainable development goals. And this would make the life of future generations, including at the personal level, my own kids, much better.
We hope you've enjoyed this program and listening to the highlights of this podcast. If you'd like to get involved in One Planet Podcast or learn more about environmental projects, click on the subscribe button. Thank you for listening.